Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Retire the Red Raider has been a refrain heard frequently over the last 2 years in Gaston County. It is a plea to retire the Red Raider mascot at South Point High School. It is one of the 33 remaining mascots among high schools in North Carolina with names and images related to Native Americans and which that community finds offensive. Already, 40 schools in this state have joined others around the country and some professional teams in dropping them. Many of these mascots have been in place for decades, but as America takes a fresh look at its history, the reality of the offensive nature of these symbols has begun to set in. If the Washington football team can drop the Redskin name, can't smaller organizations follow suit? That's exactly what a group called Retired the Raider is asking of the Gaston County School Board, but to date, nothing has happened. The board released a statement saying the Gaston County Board of Education does not have the policy that addresses school mascots, and went on to acknowledge that, quote, people have strong feelings related to school mascots. Some people say the South Point mascot is tradition, while others say it is inappropriate. The board has heard both sides of the issue and believes changing a mascot should start at the school and community level, since it is at this level where school mascots, colors, logos, etc., are typically determined, end quote. We asked a representative of the board to join us this hour. They declined, but we do have several people here to provide some perspective. Rebecca LeClaire is back with us after about a week and a half absence. She's our returning champion. She's the president of the Metrolina Native American Association and a member of the North Carolina Commission of Indian Affairs. Good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Jason Black is professor in the Communication Studies Department at UNC Charlotte and author of Mascot Nation, the Controversy Over Native American Representations in Sports. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mike.
Laura Boyce is founder of the Retire the Raider Group and an alumnus of South Point High School. Thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
And we're joined by Ann Doss-Helm. She's WFAE's education reporter who's been covering all of this in that capacity and also as a resident of Gaston County. Ann, welcome back.
That's right. Good morning. I'm coming to you live from shouting distance of South Point High School.
Okay. Well, Laura, let me start with you because as I understand it, the South Point High School has had the name Red Raiders, I think. It's a little fuzzy here, but since 1969 officially, or 68, or somewhere in there, when the school was born out of the consolidation of Belmont and Craverton High Schools, why is it only recently that this has become an issue?
Sure, and just to clarify the history as I understand it, the Red Raiders mascot predates the founding of South Point High School when the different high schools in Belmont, including Reed High School, which was the formerly all-Black high school, were consolidated as part of desegregation. So the Red Raiders mascot was the mascot of Belmont High School prior to that, the formation of South Point High School. And I think it's important to recognize that Native communities have been rallying to retire Native mascots since at least the 1960s. I know Dr. Black can help us with some of that history even more so, but the idea that these mascots have just recently become offensive to Native communities is completely inaccurate. I know for myself as a student at South Point in the late 90s and early 2000s, I myself didn't understand what was offensive about the mascot and what really brought it to my attention was after I spent some time outside of Belmont and got to know Indigenous people and to understand the perspectives of why these mascots are inaccurate, harmful, offensive. That's how I became aware of it. But I think the idea that this is a new matter, particularly for Indigenous communities, is definitely not the case.
And Dr. Black, I believe I'm correct in saying that you have said this has been a conversation that's been had in that area of our listenership since 1968. If that's accurate, that this conversation has been going on since then, why are we just hearing about it now? Or is that really the case? Have we just not been listening?
Well, I think that's a really good point, your latter point there. For sure, 1968, it's verifiable. We know that the National Congress on American Indians have been talking about this since that point. There was a statement that they put out way back in 1968 to that effect. And in fact, in professional sports, we haven't had an indigenous mascot since 1968, which gives you a sense that the controversy was not just brewing, but really sort of generative in that moment. So for sure, the mascot controversy has been around. Activism has certainly been a part of the past 50 plus years within indigenous communities and non-indigenous communities as well. The reason that we're seeing more and more discussion about the mascot is in part summer of 2020, our nation's summer of racial reckoning, a chance to really look closely and deeply at our histories and how history isn't just stagnant, but that it's living and that it impacts our present and futures. So this is where we started to see changes at the Washington NFL franchise. Of course, the Cleveland Major League Baseball franchise as well. But just because this started to pop up even more in our mind's eye and on our tables and before us in the United States in 2020, it doesn't mean that there hadn't been campaigns leading up to that point. Great point that it's perhaps that we haven't been listening. We've been hearing. We know this controversy exists, but hearing is auditory, right? Listening is the cerebral. Listening is the intellectual, the cultural. And you're right. That's where we've been missing the cylinders. So,
and you've been following education for a long time. Now for us, first with the Charlotte Observer, and I know that this Red Raider, Retire the Red Raider group, organized officially about 2 years ago. Is this the strongest and most... we'll leave it at strongest. This is the strongest push for removing that title that you can remember?
Well, this has never been something that's been on my central radar. This one probably is more because it is almost literally in my backyard, but I was looking at this last night, and we've had a number of schools nearby that have already changed their mascots, including West Mecklenburg High School was the Indians, and they changed that to the Hawks in 2004. There were a few elementary schools in Union County that also changed their mascots around that time. We had Indians went to Bluebirds at Waxhaw Elementary, Indian Trail Elementary, which I guess you can see how they came up with the name Indians. They changed in 2007 to Tumbles the Timberwolf. So it's not new. I think what is different here is that the Gaston County School Board has just been so adamant about not addressing this, that they... You know, the people keep coming back and making their case, and they're saying, nope, we're, you know, and as you noted, we would have loved to have had someone on the air here making their case. I will not do a good job of making the case for them because this is not something I've covered full time. I want to be clear. I don't cover Gaston County Schools the way I do Charlotte Mecklenburg, but I have called, I have left emails, I have tried to get interviews. They aren't talking.
Rebecca LeClaire is with us. She she's president of the Metro Line and Native American Association. We're going to get into the nitty gritty of some of the reasons that Native Americans find these mascots offensive. But just give us the broad overview, because this actually may surprise some people that Native Americans find these images offensive. Why?
Is what brings with the mascots. So usually when a school or an NFL team has a mascot, what comes with that is the offensive action. So for example, the Redskins, everybody was dressed up in the stadium like Native Americans. That's very offensive. To wear a headdress is a cultural and significant part of being a Native American. So seeing people wearing headdresses in a stadium is very offensive. Red Raiders is the same way. One, the name alone is offensive. To put a Native American with the name Red Raiders is just mind-blowing that even happened. But then to do, for example, homecoming week, there might be little stages going on where they're doing dancing, they're interpreting Native Americans. What happens in the stadium during the football games, during the tomahawk chop, You know, dressing up as Native American, painting your face red, all of that is offensive. So not only the name, but the actions that come along with the mascot is what's so offensive.
Some people may find even that difficult to understand where the offense is in that. Would you then say that this is comparable to blackface?
Exactly. Yes, very much so. I mean, just because you would never have a mascot in any other ethnic race, you would never have a mascot as a black person or somebody walking around as a blackface as a mascot. The world would blow up at that. But Native Americans, there are only but so many of us, and they think it's an honor. And it's not an honor, no matter how many times we say it.
Well, let's talk about that, Jason, because people do believe, why wouldn't this be considered an honor? We have named our team after Native American culture or Native American habits or whatever. Why isn't that a tip of the hat to that culture?
Right. Well, teams are naming themselves after Indigenous people in a very particular historical frame. They're brokering in names, images, and rituals. There are three parts to this that we can maybe talk deeper about later, but they're brokering in images of violence. So where's Chief John Ross of the Cherokee Nation going to Washington, D.C. fighting against removal, right, for instance? Where are all the diplomats from the early 20th century brokering reservation policy? What we see instead is warfare. And the irony and hypocrisy that in the 19th century, Native nations were removed, allotted, assimilated, and killed throughout the course of time because of who they were, and now we're celebrating that violent imagery. It wasn't okay for two centuries, right? Suddenly the Indian Wars end, reservations are put into place, and now it's okay to broker in playing this notion of Indian. So what it does is it relies on violent images. I graduated from Florida State University. You know, what do you see there? You see a bunch of white folks dressed up in red face, hinging and unhinging their arms in a violent motion towards other players of the opposing team on the field while chanting a war chant to a song called Massacre. Right? What it does is it locks Indigenous folks into this sort of circuitry of violence. This is not honoring history, culture, religion, symbolism, right? It's honoring, it's looking at war. It's looking at violence.
I want to come back to FSU in a little while because they are the Seminoles. They're named after the tribe, and the tribe sanctioned that. At least the Florida branch of the Seminoles sanctions that. We'll talk about that. The Oklahoma branch does not. But Jason, there's a publication called Indian Country Today that says that the use of these mascots, quote, has its origins in the myth created by white Americans near the end of the 19th century as a means to define the notion of American exceptionalism and its roots in conquering the country's indigenous inhabitants. To modern people who don't know that, it doesn't look that way. But was that the intent when these names first really became into general use in the early 20th century?
Absolutely. I mean, symbolic control is an extension of territorial control. So once land is taken, once resources are taken, once Indigenous folks are on reservations in safe spaces away from the federal government and the U.S. military, right? Now it's time to colonize symbolically. And there was this sense of, as America working through the Progressive Era and through the Industrial Revolution was getting to quote unquote civilized, there was a hearkening back to the sort of American frontiership that playing Indian connected with. Another problematic part of the mascot.
Dr. Jason Black is with UNC Charlotte, co-author of Mascot Nation, The Controversy Over Native American Representations in Sports. We will continue in just a moment on Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the use of Native Americans' imagery and names for teams, etc., in athletics at almost every level in this nation, and the move toward removing them. Rebecca LeClaire is the president of the Metrolina Native American Association. She's here along with Laura Boyce, who's the founder of Retire the Red Raider. That's a campaign at South Point High School in Belmont to retire that name. Dr. Jason Black is the co-author of Mascot Nation, and Ann Doss Helms is here. She's our education reporter at WFAE. Laura, I know that as a student at South Point, you saw no problem with this. The understanding of the offensive nature of these mascots came much later, after you graduated. Why?
I think a lot of it has to do with the way we are taught Indigenous history and my lack of exposure to Indigenous people. Belmont is a fairly homogenous town. We have less than 1% in terms of Native American population, based on the census data that I've seen. And I, you know, really bought into a lot of the what we were talking about earlier with the idea that this is an honor to Native Americans, not understanding the legacy of colonialism and of racism that really underlies these mascots. I remember very clearly, you know, one of my classmates, a white man dressing up as a Native American, riding around shirtless on horseback at games. And we thought that was just the coolest thing. And, you know, again, exposure to actual the voices of Indigenous people, understanding and learning about the research that shows the harmful psychosocial effects of Native American mascots on Native American youth, but really on all youth, really helped me to understand. I specifically remember South Point won the state championship a year or two after I graduated. So I was in college and I was really excited about this and sharing this with some of my college classmates. And in the course of that, shared, you know, the name and I think, you know, a post with a picture, and got the reaction that I got from classmates was, you know, you realize that mascot is really racist. And that was one of the first times that I had really even thought about it and really looked closely at this bright red face, this caricature it was in the water as I was growing up. It was just something that I took so for granted that I wasn't able to step back until that point and really think about it in a different way.
Rebecca, Jason has said that the use of these mascots stem from settler colonialism that demeans and enacts white dominance over Indigenous people. And there are those who object to these calls for name and mascot changes because they refer to it as politically correct bullying. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt that they don't understand the root causes of this. But the objections of this change and this emerging acknowledgement of a different view of American history is very much our re-examination of the Confederacy and Confederate monuments and symbols. Are these two parts of the same story?
I mean, I think they are. I mean, there's different aspects to everything, but do I feel like this is on the same level as the monuments? I do. I really do. Even when the monuments were, you know, people were having issues with the monuments, I also think, you know, well, that's history and people need to understand about it. But I mean, looking back on it now, I mean, they're all the same. It's all connected to each other. I mean, it's just very offensive. And I mean, people have got to wake up and understand what's going on in this world and how other people feel.
Haley Brazil, I hope I'm saying her name correctly, a member of the Catawba tribe, made this statement at a Gaston County School Board meeting in which she raises some interesting questions.
Would Gaston County School Board have the same resistance against removing a mascot called the Black Raiders? What about the White Raiders? Although we, as Native people, aren't the ones that stole anyone else's land. Why are Native American issues ignored and silenced? Do they not realize that this undermines our sovereignty, which is a civil rights violation? Why are Native mascots the only ethnicity that is used widespread throughout the entire nation?
Jason, you were there that night. Can you answer that last question? Why is this the only ethnicity that is depicted in such a way?
I think there are a number of reasons. I think the first is this argument of quantity, that because there's such a small population compared to other racial minorities, or marginalized people, that Indigenous people simply don't matter. They ought not be listened to or considered because their numbers are small. But I would challenge that quantity argument with humanity, that as long as one person is harmed by practices that could easily be stopped and controlled, this isn't like the universe, you know, sort of closing in on us. This is something that we can change. It's within our power and authority and agency to change. So I think that's one of them, is that argument by quantity that tends to get thrown around there. There's also the notion of quote unquote defeat that we just talked about in the last segment, where after the Indian Wars, after reservationism, Indigenous spaces become somewhat safe to play around in. So we have the Boy Scouts, we have Hollywood depictions, we have American advertisements, right? Redmond chewing tobacco and Land of Lakes, although that image has now been retired, among other practices. And so, you know, that tends to silence people when there's not a lot of presence. There's also the mind's eye of the American people, where all we see are violent imagery, thanks to Hollywood media, et cetera. That's one of the those are some of the reasons.
She mentioned, Haley mentioned the use of these terms, which undermines the sovereignty of Native American tribes, which is, she says, a civil rights violation. From what you know of the law and how it intersects with schools and civil rights, is that true? And if so, couldn't this be solved, all of this, by one well-placed lawsuit at the federal level?
I am not going to jump into offering legal advice to anyone, but it seems like it is not going to be solved at the level of just sort of sitting down and saying, okay, this was not meant to be offensive, which is what you hear all the time, is we don't intend this as offensive. And I think a lot of us have been learning that it doesn't always matter, that the dominant culture does not get to define whether somebody else can be offended or not. And I think what Jason said is very true, that a lot of us grew up not knowing Native Americans, were perhaps miseducated to believe that they were sort of mythic figures like pirates or, you know, whatever, you know, they weren't quite real people. We dressed up as them and we played cowboys and Indians. And so Laura talked about seeing a male person riding a horse. I remember that when my son was there, which was a little later in the early 2000s. And there was a young white woman who would ride out on her horse, and, you know, and there would be the chants and the music that we thought sounded like Native music, and everybody would cheer. And it was like, yeah, it was kind of powerful and dramatic, but at the same time, it was like, ooh, it's a white person playing Indian, you know? So I don't know how this would fare as a lawsuit, but it seems like they've kind of been knocking at the door politely for quite a while and not getting in.
So, Jason, you were at that South Point or that school board meeting in Gaston County when Haley spoke, and I want to play something else that she said and have you comment on it. Let's listen to it first.
I had a gentleman message me and call me a lot of slurs. I have been told to kill myself, to commit suicide. I have been spit on during protest as an Indigenous woman who is sacred to this land. This same gentleman told me to go back to the country that I came from. And my response was, I'm already here. Gaston County is my homeland as a Catawba person. South Point High School and East Gaston High School set on my land.
This is yet another example of a fundamental lack of understanding of American history, it seems to me, because the Native Americans were pushed by white settlers off lands that they lived on for hundreds of years, perhaps millennia, and pushed into reservations and forced to do all kinds of things, which we don't really learn about in history class. What's your opinion of all of that? Is the problem a lack of education? It's okay.
I think so in part, but let me get back to Haley's narrative there and Haley's truth, what she's been experiencing. That right there is a sign. It is an emblem of the way that mascots impact Indigenous people and the way that it offers the permission and license of non-Indigenous people to treat Native folks the way that that caller or the way that that person treated Haley right there. The fact that someone would feel they have the agency to do that is part of this Mobius strip of understanding or Mobius strip of misunderstanding involving stereotypes of Native people, that they're just not worthy to have a respectful conversation with, which, by the way, is why many of us are upset that the school board won't even engage tribal leaders in a conversation, which is the core of American democracy. Deliberation. That's what we do in this country.
You said that at that meeting to the Board of Commissioners.
I mean, listen, they don't necessarily have to agree prima facie, like right from the beginning, about the mascot controversy. But why not have a conversation? You know, what's at stake? What are they going to lose having a conversation? Are they just going to continue to have folks show up on a Monday night and talk for 3 minutes ad infinitum? Are they going to have people continue to show up and demonstrate with signs and things like that? Or the conversation is the starting point in all of this. That's all. That's in many ways, that's the first step. That's what people are asking for.
Researchers. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't think at core people intend harm. I think as you asked a moment ago, it's about education. It's about not understanding what brokering in these images do.
And we have repeated indications that either we're teaching it the wrong way or we're teaching the wrong things or it isn't sinking in. Researchers at Penn State found that 87% of content taught about Native Americans is about what happened pre-1900. Little to anything is taught about contemporary indigenous people and how they live. Or about the results of what was done to them back in the 19th and 18th centuries and even into the 20th centuries. Right now, Anne, there's a great concern among people on the right about how American history is being taught and how the way we're teaching it is beginning to change as we examine some of this nation's sins over time. And every nation has sins. They have a dark side in their closet. But we're talking about when it comes to Black people and their American experience. Is this the same thing at work here? We don't want to acknowledge this.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to connect the dots on all the controversies, yes, this is very much tied into the questions about how we teach American history and some of the resistance that there is. And Gaston County is a strong majority white county. It's a conservative county. It's has a history as textile mills. So there's kind of just a don't rock the boat, don't change things mentality. And I think that there is resistance to this idea that we should learn differently about the founding of our country. And, you know, some of this is that we should not make white children feel bad about what happened, which, you know, I'm not sure that education should be about controlling how people feel about it. It should be about teaching what happened. So, yeah, I mean, you can literally connect all the dots. And you mentioned the Confederate Memorial controversies. Gaston County has been there also. And they did at least convene a group to discuss it, which was very interesting. And although, you know, kind of that happy ending did not really materialize, they all talked about it and very narrowly agreed to get rid of the Confederate monument that's standing in front of the Gaston County Courthouse and came up with a deal for somebody to take it. And the Daughters of the Confederacy said no. So it's still standing there. So this is just kind of the way things tend to happen here is to just ignore them and wear people down.
Rebecca, if you go to the webpage for the Big Red Booster Club at South Point High School, they pose the question, why are we Red Raiders? And the answer comes courtesy of the Gaston Gazette and explains that Belmont and Stanley were originally named after birds. But the perception was that birds weren't tough enough for a football team. So in 1946, Belmont changed its name to Red Raiders and adopted an Indian logo. Most all teams, at least football teams, are named after things that are tough or vaguely dangerous, like I can't think of it. I'm not good at this. So, Jaguars, Panthers, etc. It could be easily argued that they wouldn't choose a symbol for a team that they didn't respect, or that would indicate weakness or a less than status. And you have said that Native Americans aren't honored by these mascots. And you referenced how some people act with tomahawk chops and war whoops and things like that, which you considered to be mocking your culture. We seem to have a dividing line here. You see it one way, these people see it another. If the intent wasn't to mock you, if the intent was to put something up there that was tough and serious and something that to be reckoned with, who's to blame here?
At the moment, I blame the Gaston County School Board. I don't know who to go back and blame in the past. Maybe having a talk with some Native Americans probably could have solved all of this for them, but they refuse to do that, mainly because they don't know any Native Americans to speak with. So now I blame the Gaston County School Board for all of this.
There are instances around the country that have been alluded to in which mascots perform what purport to be traditional Native American dances or rituals at games. And this is viewed by a lot of people in the Native American community as mockery. It dates back to the early 20th century. It was the time when civilization regulations forbade Native Americans to speak their native languages or to practice their religions or even leave the reservations that white people herded them onto. They couldn't perform ceremonial dances, but at the same time, pretend Indians could do so at football games and the like. It was happening on the sidelines of the Cleveland Indian games. If more people understood that, Jason, would it be easier to make these changes, or at the very least, easier for people to understand why all of this is so offensive?
I think it would help. I think education is important. And I think engaging with people respectfully and responsibly is always a good thing to start with, you know, rather than sort of tearing right into them. Realizing that we're all victims in many ways of the educational systems that surround us, but it takes an interventive moment. To correct some of those things. I think so. I think if people understood the hypocrisies of banning the ghost dance, of banning the sun dance, of banning the eagle feather in religious symbolism, killing people because they wielded the tomahawk, killing braves because they earned feathers in what would ultimately be a leader's headdress, those kinds of things. And again, the irony and hypocrisy of using those and celebrating what was once considered uncivilized or savage, or certainly a reason to kill people and remove people. I think that that kind of history would be important. It's not just about the Trail of Tears and that forecloses all of history. There's a long strand of suffering and a long strand of decolonization too. So fighting back that exists as a result of this. Education is absolutely key, says the professor.
We're going to talk about where we stand, why these mascots are damaging to people within the Native American community, and there's evidence that they are psychologically damaging, particularly to young people. We'll come back and talk about that and more in a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Native American mascots for football and basketball and other teams at all levels, from grade schools through professional sports, and the current controversy over the request to remove the Red Raider name from South Point High. That's spearheaded by Laura Boyce, one of our guests. She's the founder of Retire the Red Raider and a South Point alum. Rebecca LeClaire is here. She's president of the Metrolina Native American Association. Dr. Jason Black is a professor in the Department of Communications at UNC Charlotte and the co-author of Mascot Nation. And Ann Doss Helms is here, our education reporter at WFAE News. At a recent Gaston County School Board meeting, the discussion seemed to be one-sided, Ann. No one opposing this that I know of spoke. Everybody who spoke was in opposition to keeping the name of the Red Raiders. Do we know how many people are on the other side? And if no one spoke to defend it, why are we even having this conversation?
Well, I think over time there have been people who have showed up. You know, school boards often have a public comment period, and by definition, it's like open mic night. You get X number of minutes to talk about anything, and the board doesn't necessarily respond back. In fact, they almost never respond back. So there definitely is sentiment to keep it the way it is. There is a sense that this is our tradition, and our perhaps being white Belmont, the people who have been the majority at South Point High School and in the community. I'm just going to take a wild guess that if you put it up to a referendum of whatever you might define as sort of the South Point High School community, they would vote to keep it, which is why I think there needs to be, as a citizen and as a journalist, I would love to see a discussion. You know, you have the people on social media who are trolls, and of course they say stupid things like, go back to where you came from. But if we have officials who really believe that this is how it ought to stay, have the courage of your convictions. You know, hear the case for, hear the case against, and say, we are keeping it this way. You know, there seem to be compromises out there. I believe it was Rebecca who said at the last meeting at the rally, you know, keep the Red Raiders, keep the red color, take away the Native American imagery.
Was going to be one of my questions. If you kept the name and the school colors and removed the imagery, because anything could be a Red Raider. You could put a lightning bolt in there or something.
Acceptable? Andrews High School in High Point came up with a Red Raider Indian, and they replaced it with a Zorro-like figure. And their logo is this caped figure on horseback with a red cape and red trim. It could be any race. It could be any gender. It's very cool. You know, obvious compromise.
But you made the allusion to Zorro. And if other people jumped to the conclusion that this is now Zorro, would that not be offensive to the Hispanic community?
Well, I hadn't thought about that. Maybe. And, you know, anytime you use people, you know, there are Vikings, there are Trojans, there are things like that. I think generally it's a point where there's less friction with the reality of life today. But it's an interesting question whether mascots should ever be people. And I think Laura's group just did a poll about some options, and people like the Cardinals and the Redhawks. Apparently birds
animals.
Are back.
Stick to animals. Jason, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I wanted to chime in there. I oftentimes see from pro-mascot people the comparison to Vikings and Trojans and Spartans, and they say, oh, you know, why aren't those groups offended? And the answer is that there are 500 plus indigenous nations active right now. There aren't many Vikings and Spartans and Trojans. There are descendants over multiple centuries, but oftentimes sort of quote unquote dead cultures are compared to indigenous folks who are very much alive and well in Turtle Island here in North America. And so
that leads me to a question about this, Rebecca, and I want to come to Laura because she has something to say about this too. But Rebecca, one of the things that we talked about the last time you were on this program, which was not so long ago, was that many Native Americans feel unheard, ignored, and invisible. Part of the problem here is that people don't think of Native Americans or, quote, Indians, end quote, as being in their contemporary lives. They are things from the 19th century. They are people from the 19th century. Therefore, it's okay to use them as mascots because they don't live among us anymore, but they do. Is that part of the problem? We don't know you. We don't know you're here.
Yeah, it is. That is part of the problem. And that ties back into education and why the education system needs to change. So that is a serious part of the problem.
Do you worry that if you remove these symbols, and I'm sure the answer is no, you don't worry about it, but if you remove these symbols, aren't you running the risk of becoming even more invisible?
No, I do not believe that. I mean, for one, I don't want anybody to think of a Native American as a mascot and to know that that's the only way you can know of us. I'd rather for us to stay invisible than for anybody to think that that's how they know a Native American to be. But removing the mascot will not keep us invisible. I think it's all about education.
Yeah.
All of these issues started years ago with assimilation, with the removal of Native Americans from their land. And the United States, the education system just needs to do better.
I remember from my high school days that being associated with my school colors and the mascot of the team, et cetera, was very, very important. It was part of my teenage identity that I was a T.C. Williams Titan. It was very, very important. And if anybody tried to change any of those things, it was a personal affront. So, Laura, that I'm sure the same things are in operation at South Point, but you come to this from a unique point of view in that you went there as a student. Your father's a former mayor of Belmont. He supports this move to change the mascot's name and image, and you're leading the charge in this. What have you been up against? What are you hearing not only from alumni but from people at the school, students who are currently there?
Well, I first want to say that while I did start the petition to that got this current group moving. I definitely wouldn't say that I'm the only leader at this point. And, you know, Rebecca has been alongside me the entire time. We have a very committed team. Dr. Black has been, you know, consistently supportive. We have heard from all community members and stakeholders of all kinds in support of our efforts. You know, there are students at the school currently, students who have recently graduated, who have been active with us, who have been at the school board speaking every single month. We've also heard, you know, from a lot of folks in opposition and many of the arguments that you all already discussed. This is an honor to Native Americans. If we get rid of this, then Native Americans will be forgotten. You know, we are proud of our team. Why aren't you proud to be a Red Raider? And you know, my response is, I love my hometown. I'm proud of where I went to high school. None of that pride has anything to do with the mascot. None of that would be lost by changing to a mascot that everyone in the community can feel proud to be associated with. And South Point is about to go to the semifinals of the state playoffs for football. And wouldn't it be great to have a mascot where not a single person in the community had to feel a sense of conflict over, do I go to this game? Am I going to participate in this tomahawk chop that I know is offensive? You know, is this something that I want to share with people and be associated with? Anne alluded to this earlier, but we've done some polling with current students and community members and have found a lot of enthusiasm for some alternative mascots, including the Cardinals, which was the previous mascot before it was switched to the Red Raiders, and obviously has some local significance in terms of, you know, Cardinals being a local bird. The Red Hawks, the red-tailed hawk is another bird that's native to this area and was also popular. The Raiders without the red and without the native imagery. I do get a little nervous about, you know, whether what the line would be there and whether people would continue to use some of the native imagery with, you know, keeping the Raiders name. But, you know, we're very open to compromise and to education. It's just, you know, we want to start that conversation.
We only have a few minutes left, and I want to make sure we talk about something that's pretty important in this conversation, which has not really been discussed at any length or depth. Dr. Black, a lot of people in the Native American community not only view these images and mascots and team names as offensive, they are damaging. They claim they are damaging and demeaning to both inside and outside the community, and studies back this up. What do they, and what does your research tell you about this?
Sure, yeah. These studies have been conducted for decades at this point within public health, within sociology, psychology, child psychology, substance abuse studies, right, within places like psychology and sociology. And what these studies find, and these studies are not just esoteric out there in the world. This involves interviewing Indigenous folks, children and adults. It involves surveys, questionnaires, focus groups. It involves critical investigation into the histories of some of these public health difficulties. And what we find is that there's increased bullying. There's increased suicidal ideation, depression, anxiety, substance abuse. High school dropout rates are higher among Indigenous folks, particularly in areas where there is a mascot. So for Indigenous people, this is a real public health crisis. To the people who say this is insignificant, do something more than study the mascot or do something more than ban the mascot, my response is, first of all, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. Okay. The second thing is that those two things work together. The material and the symbolic work together. Stereotypes of African-American folks plugged right into Jim Crow. Jim Crow, the materiality of that plugged right into the stereotypes of African-American folks. The same thing happens here. You cannot ignore the numbers. You may not be educated about it, but here we are talking to people about it. Be educated about the ways that public health for Indigenous people is impacted. And by the way, it also impacts non-Indigenous people because they don't see that, because they think they can broker and have permission to engage in those stereotypes because they may not know what goes on there. But it's all folded together here.
And Rebecca, according to NPR, let's drill down a little further into this. A series of studies shows that if Native Americans, particularly adolescent Native Americans, are shown images stereotypical of stereotypical Native American mascots, their self-esteem goes down. Their belief in their community goes down. Their belief in achievement goes down. Their mood declines. Has that been your experience? Is that what you're hearing within your community?
You know, within, I live in the Charlotte area, so I deal with a lot of urban Native Americans in the area. So I've met with parents and with different, and met with, you know, students who attend, who have attended schools that are offensive. And I mean, yes, it's definitely happening, you know, but living in a tribal area, we're surrounded by our culture. So, you know, we don't hear those statistics, but we know they're there. And the National Congress of American Indians has said it's there. So when it comes to Native Americans, it just all depends on where they're located, their tribal area too.
Just as we've said many times about African Americans, your culture is not a monolith. There are people on both sides of almost every issue you can come up with, including this one. And a good example, Jason, is the Seminole Nation of Florida giving its approval to FSU to use Chief Osceola as their team's mascot. And for people who don't know, a student dressed as the chief rides on horseback with a flaming torch in his hand around the field before football games as students in the stands engage in a war chant. Seminole Nation of Florida is on board with that. The Seminole Nation of Oklahoma, not so much. They feel uneasy about this. So given that, what's the right way to go? There's a split within the Native American community over this. Jason, yes. You went there, so I'm going to throw the question at you.
I sure did. And 21 years ago, this semester is when I started to study the mascot controversy because of my time at Florida State. There is no one right way. So I think we should go ahead and throw that out the window. Life is complicated. Being public citizens in the public sphere and in the public square is very challenging. But we can look at respect. And we can look at the right way to do things or the just way to do things. Seminole Tribe of Florida agrees with the mascot. They have a financial connection with the university in many ways. The Seminole Nation of Oklahoma, which is the largest, which is interesting because I'll play the quantity game just like the other side plays the quantity game. The largest group, the Seminole Nation of Oklahoma, which were those folks who were removed, who did not stay in homelands, perhaps because of assimilative relationships with the U.S. government back in the 1840s, disagree with it. There could be a way to broker something between them. For instance, at Florida State University, when Chief Osceola rides out on that horse, how about not carrying a spear? Chief Osceola had a rifle. How about an Appaloosa horse, as beautiful as they look, not indigenous to Florida? How about a white fraternity kid not being trained from the time he's a freshman to then take assume that role senior year, playing Chief Osceola and painting his face red, right? There are some ways to broker it in different ways. How about getting rid of the tomahawk chop or the song Massacre? Or how about banning not just headdresses and face paint, but also feathers too from those stadiums? So there's a way to sort of broker that. Ultimately though, it does come down to indigenous people's agency and sovereignty. If the Seminole Tribe of Florida agrees, you know, it's difficult.
And I have 30 seconds. So very quickly, the school board at Gaston County says they don't want to handle this. This should be handled at the school level. There is legislation perhaps being formed at the legislative level in North Carolina to rid schools of these Native American mascots. And that's a course that will be taken, I suppose, if the Native American population feels the need. What has the school itself said, if anything, about this, Anne? Quickly.
Very little. And it's hard to imagine any principal wanting to plunge into this in the times we're in with all the challenges that schools are facing with staffing shortages and COVID and all of that. It would be an explosive topic. So he has not gone there.
Anne Doss Helms, education reporter for WFAE News, Rebecca LeClaire, president of the Metrolina Native American Association, Dr. Jason Black, co-author of Mascot Nation, the controversy over Native American representations in sports, and Laura Boyce, the founder of Retired the Red Raider and a South Point alum. We'll be hearing more about this in the near future, I'm sure. Thank you all for the hour. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.